Hi, this is Paul. I continue to play with my channel. I just play with my channel. My channel's a plaything. And I've been playing with the membership section for a while, and I've started playing with my cell phone and a selfie stick to make some special little members-only videos. And I just finished one. Should I stop making public videos and go OnlyFans? This ultimate clickbait. But in that video, I made the point that I was thinking about right before I make this public video, which is I was making the point that I don't watch as many Jordan Peterson videos anymore, partly because I don't know who's at fault or who's responsible or how this works, but on Daily Wire, increasingly, he seems to be just another station in the alternative media contra-narrative network. He talks to the same people as Joe Rogan, as all the other people, once they get on this network, and it's this whole alternative media, YouTube, contra-narrative network, and then they all just start, they'll be on Trigonometry, they'll be on Joe Rogan, they'll be on Jordan Peterson, they'll be on, Dave Rubin will get clips for it and do little videos of that, and it's just all part of this increasingly formed network of contra-narrative alternate media podcast, and that's fine, but I just think Jordan Peterson is frankly wasted as a guest show host. And that's kind of what he becomes in this, because there's always the competition, because if Jordan is excited and does have ideas, then he's not a terribly good guest show host. And in fact, conversations are difficult things to have. And I think that's really true in this latest conversation with Bishop Barron. I've long said that Bishop Barron, while being he's a fine academic, he can be a very powerful preacher. As a guest on these shows and as someone to think together with and get some dialogos going, not very good. What you tend to get from Bishop Barron are stock sermons that end in a Roman Catholic style-esque altar call. And that's just kind of the way it goes. And in this video with Peterson, now the thumbnail's staying more static these days with Peterson. They're not changing those as much, but the titles change quite a bit. True stories that drive spiritual growth. I know this is probably the third or fourth title of this video so far. It's episode 431. When they change the titles, it makes it increasingly difficult to have that title be something you can find later on. I know they changed the titles in order to try to improve the YouTube algorithm, but I think part of the fact that Jordan Peterson is being wasted is, this has Bishop Barron on it, has 186K views for 4 days, which isn't bad. I mean, who am I to talk my tiny little channel? But I think 5 years ago, there would have been a whoosh to go and watch this video that isn't there anymore. And again, part of that is sort of mapped territory. And I think part of it is, so with this conversation with Bishop Barron, again, like many conversations with Bishop Barron, and many conversations with Peterson and other sort of high status, so hierarchies bind and blind. And so in the same way, perhaps I'll be fair, the Christian Reformed Church binds me and blinds me to some degrees. The Roman Catholic Church, a much bigger hierarchy, binds and blinds Bishop Barron and his status hierarchy in terms of Word on Fire and his sizable YouTube channel, and Sam Harris with his sizable podcast following and, indebtedness to the implicit Church of New Atheism. These guys aren't the best conversation partners to go back and forth, because I think what Jordan is, I still think Jordan Peterson's vocational sweet spot was a clinical psychologist and a university professor. That doesn't mean he isn't a fine speaker on tour. He is. It doesn't mean he doesn't write important books. I think is 12 Rules for Life. Did 12 Rules for Life sell the way that it did because it was Jordan's book or because of the book itself? If it had been under a pseudonym, would it have sold that well? I definitely not. And I'm very interested to read his next book. And I have a lot of thoughts in terms of it. We are not 2018 anymore with 12 Rules for Life sort of hitting that moment. And in many ways, almost everyone who's going to write a response to that book has already knows the name Jordan Peterson and already has fairly substantive opinions formed with respect to him. And that's going to impact how the book is received and whether or not people buy the book. So I don't expect the next book to sell as many copies in the near term as 12 Rules for Life did. I have a friend of mine who has just started watching Jordan Peterson's Maps of Meaning lectures and really enjoying them and finding them quite fresh. And he's a colleague of mine. He's not currently in a church, but he's finding them very interesting. And yeah, rightfully so. I think, again, in many ways, that was sort of the sweet spot for Jordan. And so when I listened to him talk to Bishop Barron in this video, I see someone who wants to try out ideas. And this is someone who's been used to trying ideas, let's say, in a graduate student lab or a seminar. And for one thing, these things are being recorded. And so there's always the audience, and the audience impacts the conversation. And Bishop Barron really isn't there to play. Bishop Barron, I think, likes Jordan, and I think they've developed a relationship. And, you know, I sure would love to see Jordan he'd love to see Jordan become Roman Catholic, yada, 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 so, as Tammy has. And maybe that's the best thing, so that Tammy and Jordan would be in the same church and have a life in the church together. I would hold no ill will if Jordan Peterson joined the Roman Catholic Church. I would hold no ill will. I would celebrate that. That'd be absolutely fine with me, where he and his wife could pursue Christ and explore Christ there on the ground in a Roman Catholic parish. I think that'd be a great thing, to the degree that Jordan is ever on the ground anywhere, because obviously his traveling and his work schedule is just absolutely frenetic. And there's a lot of good things in this video, but to me, many of the set pieces from Bishop Barron are great. Again, Bishop Barron is a first-class mind. He's a first-class academic. He's a first-class preacher. All of those things are true. But if I want to hear a Word on Fire sermon, I can go to Word on Fire. And what I'd really love to see him be able to do with Jordan, and maybe he can't do this in front of an audience. Kale and I just had our conversation this morning, and my thoughts haven't changed with respect to YouTube, that YouTube is a place for people with little to lose. And now, in some ways, Jordan has little to lose. He's been emeritized from his post at the university. He can't really be a clinical psychologist in any meaningful sense right now, both because of his fame and because of the College of Ontario credentialers who are supervising him. But he's looking for someone to work through ideas with. And actually, I mean, you could see that when he got on stage with Father Stephen DeYoung, and when he got on stage at the, I wasn't at the Symbolic World Summit, but I have the videos, and I've watched some of them, and I've paid careful attention to Jordan interacting with them as the only non-Orthodox person often on the stage. And he's looking for conversation partners. And maybe, again, Jordan doesn't have a lot to lose, so he can think out loud in public. But maybe a lot of the religious people can't. So maybe those conversations have to be offline, which is absolutely fine. I love that they're online, so I can at least see them. And I very much look forward to the new seminar. But, you know, I remember when the Exodus seminar came out, the idea was he was going to do the seminar, and then he was going to do standalone basically standalone lectures with respect to Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. They didn't really touch Deuteronomy, but not much Leviticus, a little bit of Numbers, and mostly Exodus. And that hasn't happened. And his perpetual roadshow suggests to me that it's probably what he's going to continue to doing. And you know, of course, why not? I'm sure it pays handsomely. He clearly enjoys it. He's going to have Jonathan Peugeot on for a little bit of his next tour. And maybe that in some ways approximates a university lecture hall. It does in terms of sort of the one-way communication, but it doesn't in terms of the relationships. Because if you're a university professor, those students matter. And it seems quite clear, both from his demeanor and also from some of the students that he's had that I've heard from, he cared about his students. I mean, there's nothing about the man that says he doesn't care about people. He seems to care deeply about people. And so I imagine when he was a university professor, he cared about his students. But he can't have students now in some ways. We're always sort of, the fourth wall has not been broken in this case. And how could it be, you know, given his status? And so it's, you know, some of the reasons why when I think about this little corner, I think about how the little corner should be, you know, they talk about subsidiarity, and that basically gets down into scale. There needs to be a network of small groups of people and pockets so that everyone who participates gets to participate. Now, hierarchies will develop. That always happens, and that's fine. But in some ways, woe to those for whom they develop, because those hierarchies do bind and blind, and you get cut off from the people you want to help, and you have difficulty knowing about their lives and having interpersonal relationships. And, you know, he was at the Symbolic World Conference and needs security. And I completely believe why he needs security, but that's just one more barrier. So it's a sad story in some ways. Now, you've come here for commentary on the video, and I intend to give you some. Jordan opens here basically with an argument for the existence of God based on large language models. And I was listening to it, and I thought, yeah, these are the kinds of ideas that I pay attention to Jordan Peterson for, these kinds of ideas, and to play with them, and to work them through, and to think about them. Now, early on when he started making videos, I noticed, and he basically attributes this to Jung as he gets into it, that Jordan Peterson, when he first came on the scene in 2017 and 2018, when he started talking about what we might talk of as religious topics, I basically saw that he was making an argument for the existence of God based on Western culture, that if you sort of remove God from Western culture, the entire system collapses. The symbolic system, the language system, the structures, it all collapses. And so he was looking at the West and seeing collapse in what he saw as the degradation of language and pronouns and forced speech. All of the issues that he became known for, these were how he saw Western civilization collapsing, and he saw it because God was such an integral, the concept of God, now let's be clear about this, because he's clear about this in the video. The concept of God was fundamental for this structure to have achieved all that it had achieved. And if you just take out the concept of God, everything else collapses. And he gets that idea from Jung, and he gets that idea from Nietzsche. And it makes perfect sense. And it's a great argument. Now, in this materialist age, and I think your Jonathan Peugeot's appearance on Seen and Unseen, whereas Jonathan is, because hierarchies bind and blind and they force you to say the same thing over and over again, which can get really boring if you're the person that has to say the same thing over and over again. Jonathan has continued to sort of refine his articulation of his main argument. And his main argument is sort of coalescing with Ian McGilchrist and what he's been doing, that the West has been seeing the world in a particular mode, and it began a very long time ago, but it's has sort of reached its peak in modernity, and now it's breaking down for technical reasons, as Jordan often says. And so for a very long time now, Jordan has basically been making this argument for the existence of God. Is it about the ontological? But there you run it into sort of Jonathan Peugeot's area there. So let's just leave ontology to the side now. For the necessity of a conceptual God in the cultural system of the West. Again, a la Nietzsche, a la Jung, and has refined it now with his playing around with these large language models. And so what he basically does here is give an argument for the necessity of the God conception in the West based on large language models. In other words, it is in our culture so deep that if you take this concept out, language falls apart, and with language, all of our other communal functioning and cultural functioning. So let's listen to his argument.
Buddy, I had the pleasure today of speaking with Bishop Robert Barron. And I've spoken with Bishop Barron a number of times before, sometimes with John Vervaeke, sometimes with Jonathan Peugeot, sometimes alone, in all sorts of different places, including Rome. We've developed a good relationship. And he's a very interesting religious thinker, in my estimation. He's contending with the core meanings of the narratives that sit at the base of our culture, and that for better or worse.
Does Jordan think he's an interesting religious thinker? Or does Jordan esteem him for his status? Now, I'm not saying, again, that's a bad thing. I don't know that Jordan has actually engaged with much of Barron's material. I certainly haven't. But of course, Brett Sokold from Canada, from Regina, wrote that book Transubstantiation, and then his mother was listening to my channel, said, oh, you should talk to Paul Vanderclay about your book. And so they sent me the book, and I read it, and they bit a lot of Bishop Barron footnotes in that book. And it was a fine book. That book was a really key moment of me, I think, having a better appreciation for the Protestant-Catholic divide over sacraments. And Bishop Barron, in this video, makes many of those same points. And they're great points. And they're well made by him. So maybe that's the piece of Bishop Barron's material that Jordan's referring to.
Worse, sometimes both unite us fundamentally and most profoundly for better. We talked today about, I suppose, it's something approximating the undeniable reality of the divine or the sacred. Even by definition, we tried to...
Okay, now, again, okay. Some people are going to watch this video that have never watched any of my videos. I'm going to interrupt the video. Probably a lot. I have a limited amount of time, so maybe not 3 hours worth. I'm going to say this once. If you want to watch the video without interruption, it's on Jordan's channel. I'm not going to just reproduce Jordan's video here. There's no need for that. It's already on YouTube. So if you don't like me interrupting, you can turn off the video now because I'm going to interrupt. Okay.
Lay out a mode of conceptualized sacred. It's something approximating the undeniable reality of the divine or the sacred.
Okay. The divine or the secret. Those are categories. And again, this isn't necessarily an argument for the ontology of God. I particularly like the ontological argument. I think the ontological argument is super sneaky. But the key to Jordan's arguments here are the conception of God and the role that the conception of God plays in our collective culture, our collective psychology, our collective consciousness, if you will, our collective unconscious, if you will. But notice if you listen very carefully to what Jordan says, he usually is defaulting to the abstract, to the categorical, and sort of avoiding the personal, because as we've seen with Jordan, either number one, he doesn't want to talk about the personal in public because it's none of your business, or number two, and or he's continuing to have questions about the personal. And so God tends to be treated as a concept, as an abstract, as the sacred, as the divine, as the transcendent, and not so much as a personal God. Now, again, when Bishop Barron gets into this, and he does so very well, when he begins to say that with nominalism, and this, again, is a common theme, and I think it's a theme that I'll probably have to pick up a little bit more, because I think while my friend Nathan Jacobs was talking about nominalism, Bishop Barron talked about nominalism at the ARC conference in Europe, I think just sort of denouncing nominalism it's sort of like complaining about the Protestant Reformation. Oh, the world would be better without the Protestant Reformation. Maybe. Maybe not. But I don't think it was avoidable. And you're likewise not going to somehow wind the clock back before Occam or SCOTUS or whoever you're pointing to as the bad guy even before the Protestant Reformation. I think what we tend to be doing is trying to get fittedness, some optimal grip in terms of our maps and the world.
Even by definition, we tried to lay out a mode of conceptualizing the proposition that there is a highest and uniting value, which I would... What would you say?
Okay, again, a highest and uniting value. And so this is where, of course, Sevilla King's work on Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance comes in. So we're going to use the abstraction of value. Oh, that's a good still shot. I'd grab that. That's a good one. Could, you know, but got to get the clickbait. Got to get the clickbait thumbnails.
Allegiance to that highest and eternal value is something like faith. It's something like covenant. It's something like the proper aim of life. It's something like the
Yes.
Proper aim of life insofar as your life is meaningful and generous and productive. All of that by definition. We laid out.
Yes. Exactly. Because right there, and this is where, again, Jordan shouldn't be a talk show host. Jordan should be working on this stuff. This is how we as a culture need Jordan. We don't need him spending hours talking to who's ever latest on the Daily Wire, Joe Rogan, Lex Fridman circuit. We need Jordan working on this stuff. Yeah, he can talk to anybody interesting he wants to talk to. At this point, Jordan can probably talk to almost anybody he wants to talk to. That's fine. If you want to record it, that's fine. But don't make him a talk show host. That's going to be a clip. Daily Wire, don't make Jordan Peterson a talk show host. Anybody can do a talk show host. Phil Donahue could be a talk show host. Maury Povich can be a talk show host. Lots of people can be talk show hosts. Let Jordan do the kinds of things that Jordan wants to do. If you want to make use of him on Daily Wire, don't make him chase every stupid culture war fox out there. Let him figure out this stuff. This is clearly what he wants to do. I don't know. Maybe you're not stopping him. I don't know. Maybe he wants to. I don't know. I don't know anything. But when he makes videos like this, I watch. I'll say that. So again, value has a function in how the culture works. And God, the concept of God, is way there at the top.
Now, the modern understanding of that and how the church, at least in part, has deviated from its obligation and responsibility to explain the nature of that relationship and to help people understand why it needs to be primary.
Now, he went all the way up to the top to value, conceptually, in terms of how the culture and the structure work. And then he came all the way down through the church. And okay, well, why has this broken down? That's a really good question.
So that's where the discussion will go. Join us. All right. So let me share some of my thoughts with you. It'll be kind of a lengthy introduction to our discussion.
Again, here, we're sort of sitting in a seminar. These are my thoughts. I want you to understand my thoughts, and I want you to compare them with what you know, and I want you to give me some feedback. And then we're going to go back and forth, and this is what we're going to do. And this is going to be fun, and we're both going to learn. And if you think I'm wrong, I want to hear it. And if you think I'm right, I want to hear it. And you think, well, 60%, yeah, but I want to hear it. And we go back and forth, and we can learn. That's fun. That's play. That's all of this good stuff together. And so Jordan does this, and then it's like, oh, Job, here's a little sermonette on Job. Oh, nominalism, here's a little sermonette on nominalism. Oh, here. And so you get these little series of sermonettes. And again, they're fine sermonettes. But Bishop Barron, talk to the man, please. You're there. You're a brilliant man. Clearly you can talk. Is it because you don't want to speak freely outside of your Roman Catholic box on YouTube because people might get upset? And I don't just mean a hierarchy. I mean, you know, the masses of Catholic people out there. And I'm a very small box. It's a Christian Reformed Church, very tiny little box. And there are people from the Christian Reformed Church watching me. And if I say something they don't particularly like, they'll let me so in the comment section or send me an email or send me a direct message or something like that. Oh, that's fine. Because I'm not as smart as Bishop Barron. I'm not as learned as Bishop Barron. I make more mistakes. And that's all well and good. But talk to the man. That's what we want. That's really what we want.
But there's been some very exciting technical developments that actually bear surprisingly on the religious question. So I'll give you one example. So one of my former students who's now working with me has been using large language models to investigate the concept of God. Now, one of the things that one of the criticisms that Sam Harris and the atheists in general have levied at thinkers like myself and thinkers, let's say, like Carl Jung, this is also a postmodern critique, is that the interpretation of a given narrative is arbitrary, that you can read into a narrative anything you want, and that there's no, you might say, intrinsic meaning in the text. Now, that's actually wrong. And we actually know why now. And we can actually demonstrate that it's wrong. And I have no idea.
And now, Jordan was exactly right. That is the critique. And if you don't believe me, you can scale this all the way down to this little corner. And you can point over to T. Grogan. And he will say exactly what Jordan, that Sam Harris was saying. Okay, this is arbitrary. Now, Jordan is talking about the development of AI, large language models. There are other little favorite critical commenters of mine on the channel who I deeply appreciate. May your critical comments continue. Keep making them. Make lots of them. I like critical comments. Doesn't mean I'm going to give you what you want, but I like critical comments. Because most of the critical commenters here are really good critical commenters. Anyway, Jordan basically is making the point that AI, robots, our attempt to, in a sense, reproduce something of us and place it into these new machines is teaching us our inability to do it. Is teaching us a lot about the complexity that is already in us, and that is between us, and that is in society. And that's really important, because to whatever degree we succeed or fail with respect to our desires to create machines that think or that see, we're learning a ton about thinking and seeing. Now, Jordan's arguments here, I think, will be unconvincing to T. Grogan or Sam Harris or many new atheists. Basically because, number one, they disagree with his worldview. They disagree with his worldview, and it goes all the way back to just the beginning of his book, Maps of Meaning, written, I believe, in 1999, where you have the world as a space of objects and a forum for action. Because, and, okay, let me, I've criticized Bishop Barron a few times already in this video, and now I'll give him the points. One of the set little sermons that he gives in this is with respect to right away, and it's germane, that God is not just one other object in the universe. And I think it's very interesting to ask the question, how we got to that point, and I've talked about that a lot on this channel, some elements of how we got to that point. But again, Jordan's argument here is for the necessity of the concept of God within our language systems. And in that sense, Jordan Peterson is right. New atheists will come back and say, but you haven't talked about ontology. And I think that's a fair response.
Idea what the ultimate significance of that will be, but let me tell you why, because this is really quite fascinating. So we know that some words are more similar than others. And then you might say, well, what makes words or concepts similar? And the answer would be something like substitutability, mm-hmm. or you could think about it as, so substitutability with regard to a purpose, it's a very critical mm-hmm. and strange definition of similarity, but also
Now I'm going to pause here. And I might just be displaying my shallowness. But does Bishop Barron's hair look like different colors there? I mean, there's long been speculation about Jordan Peterson's hairline. I just was speaking to a woman who was help staff at a high-status post-Oscar party. And so we were talking to her about, I mean, she was basically waiting tables, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the observations she made was, there's so much plastic surgery. So I don't know. I mean, I kind of expect it from Jordan. I don't know that it is or isn't. There's very interesting YouTube. Why do I think about it? It's because of this, baby. Because you don't really appreciate your hair until it's gone. Then you walk outside and say, shoot, I got to wear a hat all the time. My head gets cold. My head gets sunburned. My head gets hot. Oh, I wish I had my hair. Gosh. I keep my channel small with this insanity. So, but anyway, I don't know if it's all natural or if, you know, I mean, he looks good. I had to look up when he was born, 59. He's in great shape. You know, the hair looks good, but I wonder. Anyway, back to the show.
Proximity in the space of meaning. And then you might say, well, what does it mean for things to be proximal in the meaning space? And it means likely to co-occur. Now, this student I'm referring to, his name is Victor Swift, by the way, he's been able to show, and this is essentially mathematically, a conceptual overlap between 10 concepts and the concept of God. So imagine this, Bishop Barron, imagine this, that every concept has a center. Okay, so the concept of God, the center of the concept of God would be God. But then imagine that there's a cloud of immediate associations around that concept, and that those associations are the concepts that are statistically most likely to co-occur with that concept.
Okay, so that's a super cool idea. that is a super cool idea. And what it shows is that, you know, we just use this language, and you know, one of the things, if you know you're a minister or something like that, and you have to deal with the text and you learn Greek and you learn Hebrew, probably just enough to get you in trouble. And you don't even know what that means. You hear it said all the time until you actually learn that you know just enough to get you in trouble, and you do get in trouble. to get exposed by someone who knows more or better. But, you know, you play with lexicons, what a fancy word, and you talk about lexical range, and you look at, and then, of course, these large language models come, and these machines are computational machines. They don't, boy, this stuff gets so interesting and so complex. They don't actually engage in meaning or do their work meaningfully. All they do is compute frequencies of words and forms of words, and that's what a large language model is. It's a computational machine with respect to language. By sampling thousands and thousands, you know, so all this text out there, so then suddenly you can look at, now it can't look at it itself. Sam and Dr. Jim just had a really good video on AI, which was really good. And of course, Sam's video, and Sam was on the Trent channel. Way to go, Sam. Our own little biblical Unitarian going out there in the world about to get crushed. Don't flee to Geneva, Sam. It didn't end well for Servetus. Anyway. How these things cohere, in other words, and I think Jonathan Peugeot is exactly right, it's parasitic in that it's the meaning is on our side of the line and the computation is on that side. So when it pulls up the data, and I think Dr. Jim is really right about what he said to Sam with respect to a number of these things. But we're being able to see the meaning because we're rearranging human speech at a level we could never access it before. And what this is doing is sort of validating and updating Jordan Peterson's old argument about the necessity of the concept of God and saying, we can now see this in our large language models. And some would say, well, that doesn't mean anything with respect to ontology. Okay, granted, I agree. But the fact that we don't seem to be able to live without it or enjoy all of this without it is suggestive that, you know, you could do a large language model on water and say, well, your large language model on water doesn't suggest that water exists. No, but it might suggest that people sort of need it.
So this is something approximating a mathematical fact. It has nothing to do with subjective opinion. So then you could imagine, and we're trying to map this, that you have God in the center, and then close to that would be the true, the beautiful, and the good. And then there'd be another cloud of associations around that, that would be second order associations. Now, the way a large language model works is that it actually learns those associations at multiple levels of comparison simultaneously. So it actually maps out what you might describe as the semantic space or the space of meaning. Now, so this would also imply, this is where it gets so cool. So imagine if we took a cloud of concepts that people universally recognized as good. So you could imagine that you and me and Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins would have a fair amount of agreement on what those goods were. You know, individual, the dignity of the individual, the idea of the good, the idea of the true, the idea of the beautiful, the idea of upward striving. Okay, now imagine that that makes a conceptual cloud. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a set.
And you can't live without it. Again, you do your large language model about water. It doesn't necessarily say that water exists, but it does suggest people sort of need it. Because it's integral to their system.
Center of that cloud that constitutes the reason for the similarity of the ideas. And it looks to me like, semantically speaking, so in terms of our verbal content, this might also be true with regards to the stories we tell, that the central concept around which all goods rotate is indistinguishable from the semantic representation of God. And it also looks like we can now map that. So I think we can dispense entirely with the criticism that the interpretation of, say, biblical narratives has to be something arbitrary.
Now, it's important that you note that that's exactly what he points to. He is dealing with the argument with respect to arbitrary. And he says, it's not arbitrary, because there's nothing arbitrary about any of this.
You can also make the case, which Carl Jung made to begin with, is that in any system of value that's coherent, there's going to be a central factor that accounts for its coherence. And it's certainly the case, it's highly probable that that's indistinguishable from the concept of God. That's how it looks. And so that's so cool, because this is starting, we're starting to be able to use this technology to dispense with opinion. So, you know, Jung said, God, called or uncalled, God is present.
Right, God is there.
Now, right. And I don't remember who he derived that from, but that was what he had carved on his castle at Bollingen. But that's the same idea, right? That implicit in a semantic landscape is the central concept of the highest ideal. That's kind of like the summum bonum. So I'm just wondering, well, what you might be thinking about in relation.
That wasn't so long. That's only like 4 or 5 minutes. That's not bad at all. And I think it's really cool. This is the stuff I want to hear Jordan working on. I think this is really helpful.
Ship to that possibility.
Yeah, there's so much there. There's questions of hermeneutics and questions of metaphysics and questions of psychology and that. You know, I'm against the postmoderns who want to unravel the self, first of all. There's no really coherent self that does this judging and analyzing. There's also, they want to unravel metaphysics. And what you're arguing there in a more sort of semantic way is that there is a coherence to the self, there is a coherence to the metaphysical structure of the real. So to use an example of God, yes, we would say that God is not a being, but being itself.
Since I've been looking at his hair, I can't believe I'm doing this. Now that I can see it from a different angle, I see the gray as sort of interpenetrating with the blonde. So maybe it's natural. Good on him. So to get actually onto his question and not to just be a holy fool here, or maybe not even a holy fool. But so again, okay, it's tangential. I'd love to hear you play a little bit more with the boundaries here and say, okay, conceptual, personal, okay, in terms of the three, that what holds the three transcendentals together? What means that they're not just sort of running on parallel tracks, but all three are pointing to something that unites them, and the thing that unites them isn't any one of them. And it must be something greater out of which all of that flows. Because that's where I think you really get into when you start thinking about the good, the true, and the beautiful, the source of those three things that are all distinct in themselves, that's sort of grabs my heart and says, that must be that which is worthy. And Bishop Barron's going to go here. That must be that which is worthy of worship and praise and allegiance and that you could live your life for.
So the famous answer given to Moses, right? Ego sum qui sum. I am who I am. Moses is asking, what kind of being are you? He's trying to put God in categorical terms. And
why would, I guess, Vulgate? That's why if you're going to quote scripture, you're going to quote it in Latin. I would say either use the vernacular or the original.
And the answer there is so important, because that makes all the difference when it comes to understanding religious language. Is if we follow Moses and his question, we will inevitably end up in atheism. Because if you think God is a categorical object in the world, eventually you'll say, well, I don't see this object, and there's no evidence for it, and I can explain the world without it. So that's why the answer of God in Exodus is so powerful, because he's saying, dumb question, wrong question. I'm not a thing in the world that you can name. I am who I am, which means I'm the prius, that's Augustine's language. I'm prior to thought and to language. I'm prior to being. I'm that upon which the categorical realm depends.
Right.
From that, if you get God is as Aquinas says, the act of to be itself. So Aquinas says God is not en summum, highest being, but ipsum esse, right?
Right,
to
the
be
principle
itself.
Of being.
Right. So if you say that, well, then right away you've got the central organizing principle of all reality, and that everything else has to cluster around, which is why we speak about God as being the creator of all things. But also to your semantic point about the good and the beautiful and so on, the true, we call those...
Now, again, he clearly understands Jordan. He's clearly understanding that Jordan is making an argument with semantics, with language, and saying that the language, you cannot take this out. It is not arbitrary. It's essential for all of our operations. It would be like saying, I'm going to give an English language class, but we are not going to use any letters. Oh, it's something essential to the operation of the cultural whole. And I think Bishop Barron understands this, but engage with Jordan about the point. I mean, Jordan, just ask him a question about large language models. Ask him a question about Jung and Jung's argument about, ask him a question about how he thinks the culture relates to that which, I mean, ontology is about sort of ultimate source of being, that which brings this culture into creation.
Those the transcendental properties of being. Wherever you find being, you find those things. Therefore, they are closely related to the central idea of God, and which is precisely why in the spiritual order, we get at God through those avenues, through the true and the good and the beautiful. It's, you know, there's our friend James Joyce. You know, when you see the beautiful girl off the beach and you take in her beauty, what that leads you to, as Stephen Dedalus says, is, oh, heavenly God, you know? So that's the Platonic path that Joyce, you know? So that's the clustering of those ideas tightly around God. And then to your point about stories, I think that's really important, because I don't agree with the postmodern kind of unraveling of narrative, and it's simply a matter of subjective opinion. It's just the reader response. See, what tells against that, as you well know, is this ancient tradition of a coherent reading of these texts. I mean, why is it that people over now millennia have read these texts and found very deep and consistent ideas? It's because they have a semantic structure, which is dependent upon a metaphysical structure, which gives rise to a spiritual transformation. They're classic.
Okay, there's a little bit of it, what he said right there. And let's back up so we can hear it again, because you might have been just lulled to sleep by the beauty of his words.
Texture. I have different reading of these texts. I mean, why is it that people over now millennia have read these texts and found very deep and consistent ideas? It's because they have a semantic structure, which is dependent upon a metaphysical structure, which gives rise to a spiritual transformation. They're classic texts for that reason. And we shouldn't simply read them as, oh, they're just this, you know, coming together of words, and I can read any old way I want to. Well, no, the whole of human interpretive history tells against that. So I think we do have to battle the postmodern, ultimately nihilism metaphysically, and the sort of indifferentism at the level of interpretation. No, these are classic texts that have spoken for very good reason.
Okay. And again, great sermon. It wasn't ad hominem. Oh, I used Latin. Oh, it followed. It was in the ballpark. We can use a baseball analogy. Bishop Barron, baseball. Okay. But engage. Say, so tell me more about this large language model. Tell me more about Jordan. How you think the language and the culture that we use, especially as a psychologist, how human behavior, how human emotions, how human motivational systems are connected. Well, maybe I'm asking, am I asking Bishop Barron to be a guest host? Because I think Jordan said a lot of interesting things there. And Bishop Barron's speech was a good speech. But he's not engaging with what to me was a very interesting point that Jordan made. So, okay, there's a large language model there. And that is sort of working parasitically from all of this accumulated text from human beings. where is, to go back to the very first conversation between Jordan and Jonathan after Jordan's illness, where does the story verse touch the physical world? The Logos becomes flesh. I mean, that's built into this. And okay, so that's in the language model. And of course, T-Grog and Sam Harris, they're going to be skeptical about it. So, well, let's play with that a little bit. And, oh, we're against postmodernism. So say we all. Okay, yeah, you both are. Appreciate it. Agreed. But Jordan's dealing with this large language model. He's playing around with these. He's going to develop AI sages, if in John Vervaeke's language, of, you know, here's a, and I think about, here's a large language model based on Nietzsche. It's going to be like resurrection because we're going to talk to Nietzsche as if everything in Nietzsche is there. Now, I'm, you know, with my little videos on my cell phone that I'm putting in the membership section, well, maybe I'll have a fuller large language model, and maybe my large language model will say Paul Vanderclay makes really petty, perhaps vain comments about insecure comments about his own baldness by pointing out the details of these men's hair. Any large language model that doesn't include these various faults of mine, only some I actually transmit to you through YouTube, is insufficient to actually raising me up and giving me a proper treatment at Judgment Day. And so there's a ton of interesting things to talk about and think about in terms of Jordan Peterson's resurrection large language model project. There's a lot that's interesting to think about there. But we don't just need another video against postmodernity. We know where both of you stand. You've said it how many times? Let's talk about this other new interesting thing that Jordan is playing with. And again, part of me thinks this is where status binds and blinds, because Jordan Peterson and Bishop Barron have a little bit of a relationship, but they can't talk that often because they both are important people with lots of responsibilities to lots of different communities, et cetera, et cetera. And so if you really want to have something interesting, have a smaller community with more frequent reps and talking, I don't know. So I should land the plane here. Maybe I'll do more in this video. I don't know. Again, Bishop Barron has great stuff. Jordan Peterson's working on some cool things. Wouldn't it be great if they actually had a conversation? That would be awesome. But unfortunately, we can't have nice things. Or we can't have... It's having a conversation, the likes of which I just described, is more difficult than we might imagine. All right, I'm sure I'll get some unsubscriptions from this video, but... I gotta be me, boys and girls. I gotta be me, and this is who I am, so that my future large language model of PVK will include all of this particular insanity. So leave a comment before you unsubscribe, please. I'd like to read it.